There is a new book out that is described this way, quote, "Contrary to many critics, Christianity has been a force for advancing, not restricting, freedom and equality for all Americans," end quote. The name of the book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land, How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. The author is Dr. Mark David Hall, whom we've had on as a guest before. Dr. Hall has written other books on the pivotal role of faith in American history. Dr. Mark David Hall teaches at Regent University, formerly known as CBN, and at George Fox University. He's also a senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, which is headed up by Dr. Byron Johnson. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we welcome Mark David Hall to the program. Dr. Hall, it seems like you've gotten some huge affiliations since the last time we talked, and I think that's great. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Byron Johnson and all he's doing at Baylor, and there's some great stuff at CBN as well, or Regent now.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Thank you for having me again. And yeah, I'm very honored to be associated with Robertson School of Government now. I'll be helping them get their new PhD program up and running.
Oh, that's great. Where did you earn your PhD, if I could ask?
At the University of Virginia. So it's returning home in a way. All of our extended family's in Virginia, and so we're thrilled to be heading back there.
Charlottesville. Well, you know, that's interesting. I don't know if you've noticed it, but there are some Bible verses at that university campus, even though they often tout it as if it's, well, Thomas Jefferson intended this to be secular. No, he intended it to be non-sectarian, but there are some Bible verses such as from the book of Proverbs. Okay, your new book is called Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land. Tell us about that book.
So the main purpose of the book is to push back against the 1619 Project and other, you know, far too many popular authors and academics who argue that Christianity has been a repressive force throughout American history that has been used to keep people down, to keep women down and African Americans and Jews and so forth. And it recognizes, I have to, that of course, sometimes Christians have appealed to the Bible to defend the institution of slavery, for instance. And yet from the pilgrims to the present day, far more often Christians have appealed to the Bible and Christian theology to advance freedom, justice, and equality for all. So I think it's an important contribution in that very lively debate.
Obviously, the title has a reference to the verse from the Bible that's on the Liberty Bell. Maybe most Americans today, unfortunately, don't know that what's on the Liberty Bell is a Bible verse.
Yeah, no, that's right. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land. It comes from Leviticus, and it is indeed inscribed in the Liberty Bell. Probably the favorite, one of my favorite stories I tell in the book is abolitionist Sojourner Truth, the former slave, would go to revival meetings, and she would hang up a banner with that verse on it, proclaim liberty throughout all the land. And what she would do first is preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so she was primarily interested in spiritual liberty, and yet she would go on then to preach against the sins of slavery, so arguing for a freedom from human bondage. And so I think that represents excellently how Christianity has been used to, in fact, proclaim liberty throughout all the land.
Okay, I don't have the benefit of the book right in front of me, so why don't you go ahead and walk through the contents? And I could ask you this before you go into that. I'm sure Martin Luther King is in your book. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have an entire chapter on the abolitionist, and the abolitionists, of course, contributed to the end of slavery in the American context. And yet, unfortunately, almost right away, we had right after Reconstruction anyway, the rise of Jim Crow legislation. So laws that were basically intending to oppress African Americans. And yet in the 20th century, what we saw was the civil rights movement, a movement led by ministers of the gospel, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, the Reverend Andrew Young, and I could keep going on, right? The leaders of the civil rights movement were ministers of the gospel, and many Christians of all colors joined them in opposing Jim Crow legislation, eventually leading to Brown versus the Board of Education that banned segregation in public schools, and then, of course, eventually the Civil Rights Act in 1964. So Christians were at the forefront of combating racial injustice in the 20th century as well as the 19th century.
You know, I once took about 2 hours on a night to watch raw footage from Martin Luther King Jr. and the whole movement and so forth. And one thing I learned in that I had never known before, never heard before, is that when they actually reached Selma in that historic march, when they, you know, we all know about the opposition to get across the bridge at Selma, but when they actually got to the other side, Dr. King spoke in a church, as was his custom, and he pulled open a hymnal, and he read from the words of the classic hymn, Once to Every Man and Nation, and that includes these verses, part of which I will paraphrase, but it goes this one part, and you can comment on this if you would. One of the verses in that hymn goes like this, though the cause of evil prosper, yet the truth alone is strong. Though truth's portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong, yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. And in his sovereignty and in his providence, he brings out these good things that ought to have been done in the first place so that we will indeed proclaim liberty throughout all the land.
You know, that's a beautiful hymn, and I think that's exactly right. And it's real easy for us in the 21st century to say, thank goodness that Christians for so long opposed slavery and Jim Crow legislation, and yet that kind of lets us off the hook, right? I think we as Christians today in the 21st century have an obligation to continue fighting for justice and equality for all. I think especially in the post-Dobbs era, with Roe versus Wade being overturned, we now have a battle, each and every one of us, in every state we live in, to fight to protect innocent human beings. And it's a frustrating fight, right? And it seems like it's never ending. And yet, hopefully, eventually, just like we ended slavery, just like we ended Jim Crow legislation, we can end the scourge of abortion in America today.
You know, it's strange, though. Unfortunately, sometimes what is described as justice, as if it's supposedly biblical justice, in reality is more of a Marxist thing. How do we differentiate those two?
You know, that's an excellent question. And of course, all sorts of things are called justice that are anything but justice. And I think probably the number one thing we need to do is steep ourselves in the Bible, to, you know, pray about issues that are difficult and to listen to all sides. And, you know, some issues definitely are complicated. To what extent should the government provide, financial aid to impoverished people? Well, we certainly don't want to see anyone in poverty. And yet, if that aid to impoverished people traps them in a cycle of poverty and dependency, then we ought not to do it, right? We ought to adopt other strategies. And yet there's no clear biblical answer. We clearly have an obligation to care for the poor, the weak, the dispossessed, but how we go about doing that is a subject of prudence. I think some issues are pretty clear, though, right? There's no question that what is inside a pregnant woman is a human being. And if Christians have any duty, it's to protect innocent human life. And I think that case is easy, whereas other cases are a lot more difficult.
Okay, so back to one of the earlier questions I asked that I didn't give you the time to answer. Please go ahead and do that. If we open this book up, what will we find in Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land? Try and highlight some of the things we have not mentioned so far.
Sure. So I begin with the Pilgrims and the Puritans. And one of the things I argue is that they are often portrayed as mean-spirited theocrats who didn't want anyone to have fun. And I hope I demolish that myth. In fact, the Puritans created some of the most democratic institutions the world had ever seen. They had the rule of law. They actually had a form of religious toleration that was more advanced than anywhere else in the world. They revised their criminal laws in wonderful ways. In England, you could be put to death for doing almost 1,000 things, including taking a deer in the king's forest or stealing a few shillings. In America, the Pilgrims looked to the Bible and said, look, this is ridiculous. There are some crimes that should be punished by death, but most should not. And in fact, what they advocated with respect to theft, for instance, was restitution. Instead of putting someone to death for stealing a cow, what the thief should do is return the cow and then pay restitution, a far more humane penalty than death. I then push from the Pilgrims up to the Pilgrims and the Puritans, I should say, up to the founding era. One of my favorite chapters is where I argue that the founders, the American founders, did a lot more to oppose slavery than is commonly recognized. For instance, 8 states voluntarily abolished slavery or put it on the road to extinction between 1776 and 1808. As soon as Congress could do so, it banned the importation of slaves. The Northwest Ordinance banned the expansion of slavery into the whole Northwest. And so I think this is a very important contribution combating the 1619 Project that talks as if the founders were just all a bunch of hypocrites. Now, of course, there were some founders that owned slaves and didn't free them. Many did free them. But we should recognize that some founders did own slaves, and we can be appropriately critical of them. But the whole story requires us understanding that the founders took many, many steps to opposing the institution of slavery.
You mentioned the Pilgrims and the Puritans as if they were kind of the same, but there are some differences, correct?
No, that's right. So the Pilgrims, of course, showed up first in Massachusetts Bay, and they were separatists. They were absolute congregationalists. They didn't want any sort of national church. They wanted each congregation to govern themselves. The Puritans, who followed the Pilgrims, were far more interested in having a national church. It would be a Protestant church, a Calvinist church, and yet they didn't really get their way. And so the Pilgrims, who came first, ended up influencing New England tremendously. And what you had is congregational forms of government. Eventually, in Connecticut anyway, they came together to work collectively for some purposes, but still it was ultimately grounded in the congregation. And one of the arguments I make, if you think about the implications of this, you have individuals coming together, debating among themselves, and taking votes on very important matters. Should we build a new meeting house? Who should be the minister and that sort of thing? This is democracy in action. And this is one of the reasons that Americans reacted so forcefully to Parliament and the Crown in the 1770s, when for the first time the Parliament stepped in and said, we're going to govern you from afar. And these New Englanders said, no way, we've been governing ourselves for up to over 200 years, and we're not going to stop now.
That's excellent. Okay, as far as the founding fathers, you were saying that some of them even freed their slaves. Can you give some examples of that? I know George Washington did upon his will.
Yeah, George Washington did as well. Some of my favorite examples, Ben Franklin, throughout his life, owned 5 enslaved persons. Eventually, he came to conclude that this was an evil practice. He freed the last of them and became president of the Pennsylvania Abolitionist Society. And in, I think it was 1790, was part of a petition to Congress, urging Congress to end slavery. John Dickinson was at one point the largest slave owner in Delaware. He ended up freeing all of his slaves at great personal expense because he recognized it was an evil, horrible practice. James Wilson owned 1 slave whom he freed. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, owned a few slaves throughout his lifetime, ended up freeing them, and as governor of New York, signed a bill to end slavery in the state of New York. And I could keep going on. And so I think it is very important to recognize that a number of founders were coming to recognize that slavery was a grave evil, that it had to be ended, and many of them were voluntarily freeing their slaves. Some did not. Someone like a Thomas Jefferson was profoundly troubled by slavery, and yet he was technically unable to free his slaves because he owed a great deal of debt. And we can criticize him for that. He lived a lavish lifestyle. If he had lived a more simple lifestyle, he could have paid off his debts and conceivably freed his slaves. And yet we need to recognize, just like today, if you or I were going through bankruptcy, we couldn't just give away our cars and our other possessions, right? So there were limitations on what some founders could do. I'm not saying that Jefferson should be free of any criticism. We can appropriately criticize him, I think. And yet we need to recognize that the founders, just like people today, were a mixed bag. Many, many were coming to understand that slavery was a grave evil and were freeing their slaves. And of course, I should hasten to say many founders never owned a slave. A John Adams, a Roger Sherman, and many others never owned an enslaved person. And so we need to recognize that the founders were very much a mixed bag, but on balance, they were against slavery.
And wasn't slavery widespread anyway around the world? So, you know, in effect, the founders were light years ahead of all the others. Okay, markdavidhall.org for more information. Again, the name of his new book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land. Dr. Hall, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you so much for having me.